a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 282. Oh, goodness. It is an absolutely beautiful day in Denver, Colorado. Sometimes I hate it. Like in the winter, you get these beautiful days and I'm always stuck working and at the day job, and it's like I'm stuck behind the bar. I can't leave. I can maybe make an excuse to go outside for something just for a second to feel it. But today I had just the way the schedule went, I gave everybody the days off they needed and worked what needed to happen, and I ended up with kind of a nice long gap of like 4 or 5 days in the middle. And so today was the first day off. And so I just working on Calyx today. But it's like 70 something degrees. It's like, it's supposed to be 74 today, which is going to be the record for this day in history in Colorado, or in Denver at least. Yeah. So there you go. 74 degrees, Denver, Colorado. Sunshine. Absolutely beautiful. I'll tell you what, it's making me homesick for, California is what it's doing, because there's something about just knowing every day it's going to be pretty nice, you know. Now, that being said, I want to ask you to send some prayers out and support whatever you can do for the people in California, because, and you know, we've been watching this dam crisis going on up above Sacramento, but. So people have kind of been ignoring Southern California, but Southern California is about to get hammered, looks like. I just was watching Weather Channel on my phone a while ago, and there's a little video, and it's like the core of like three big storms coming, and they're just like all aimed right at Santa Barbara, Ventura County, like my old stomping ground. So I know I have a lot of listeners out there. Justin Schneer and his family, Michael Miley, Kirby and Blythe, the Marings, all you people, all you good folks out there in Ventura County, be careful. My goodness. They were saying that, like, you have to take some of these flash flood warnings like seriously. So, tomorrow's when it's going to hit. So, yeah, because I mean, I guess when we have drought like we've had, and there's been forest fires and stuff, there's that can really, really amplify how fast things can flood. And there's going to be mudslides, and you know, the dirt gets loose and trees fall over and stuff. And so they're, I'll tell you what, man, California can't catch a break. It's like they go 3-4 years without any rain to speak of, and now the biggest dam in America is on the verge of breaking, and they're about to just get hammered, you know, like a foot of rain or something, like 7-8 inches. I mean, it's going to rain an inch an hour, I think, on Friday, they said. So, my goodness. It's nice most of the time in Southern California, though. I mean, this is definitely the exception to the rule. This is winter, though. I mean, this is right about February is when the rains normally come. And I've seen some pretty ugly, when I was going to Thomas Aquinas College, that for the very first year, we were technically an island for a while because the road in both directions was washed out or closed. And then when I returned to Thomas Aquinas College, the last time I left and came back twice, it was 2004, I believe. Yeah, that spring. That's when it got absolutely insane. We had the road to San Apollo washed out, and then the road between Ventura and Ojai was down to one lane, and that was the only way to get there. And it was like for a while there, Mike, I was living off campus at the time, and my little half an hour easy commute in the morning turned into like 2.5 hours each way for a while there. I'd study in the car. You just drive for a while, then shut your car off and just sit there and just drink coffee and study. I mean, there was just nothing. I did all of my reading on the way to and from class. It was just, it was ridiculous. It was, ooh, goodness. Anyway, so there you go. Be careful, California. So, you know, it's funny. I'm trying to get back on the bandwagon, you know, trying to eat healthier, eating paleo-ish, kind of paleo with the occasional white rice. I'm kind of doing the perfect health diet. If anybody's read that book, that's a really good book. Paul Jamadit, I think, is the guy who wrote that. Anyway, the perfect health diet. I'm kind of doing that kind of a thing, you know, just kind of like paleo plus a little white rice. Man, there's something about having the weather so nice like this that puts me in that California mood. And the, when I get in that California mood, I start and I'm eating paleo-ish. my common lunch based on, ever since I heard of this concept from, what's the guy's name that wrote, Mark that wrote the Primal Blueprint, Mark, oh, I think of his last name, Mark Sisson. He says that for lunch every day, he has the BAS, which is, big something salad. Big old salad. And so I had the BAS today for lunch. I had a giant bowl of veggies and lettuce and stuff with some leftover chicken. And just like, nothing makes you feel more like you're back on target and you're eating well than just eating more vegetables in one salad than you normally eat in a day. It's like, you know, it's funny, you know, the thing is that when I'm paleo, when I'm really strict paleo, I eat way, way, way more vegetables than I ever eat. People think that paleo is like a bunch of meat all the time, but it's like, I eat way more salads, way more vegetables. For a while there was a paleo hashtag going around that was hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. And it's true. You can't eat whole grains. You can't eat beans. You can't eat dairy. So, when you're paleo, I mean, you eat meat and vegetables pretty much. And so a little bit of fruit. So yeah, so there's nothing that makes you feel bad. I have to admit, you know, you just feel great when you eat like just, I mean, I just ate a bowl of like sliced vegetables and stuff with some olive oil and some apple cider vinegar and stuff like the size of my head. So, there you go. There's the lunch report. So, man, I am laid back today. I'm having trouble figuring out getting worked up about anything today. It's like I was off. I got up at a decent hour. I went to bed at a decent hour, slept in long enough. Man, woke up with an ugly sinus headache though, but I managed to shake it off pretty quick. But yeah. So, but just, yeah, just kind of hanging out this morning. I was working on the vision for Calyx, you know, my apostolate. Just kind of tried some things that haven't worked. And I just really, you know, I really started getting just super serious about, okay, what do I want to see in this world that doesn't exist? And what would that look like? Apart from how it's going to come about, what role I'm going to play in it, just if someone, the thing that I'm called to kind of bring about in this world, if you could snap your fingers and it'd be done, what would it look like? You know? And I think that's a really good exercise for anybody to do. Cause everybody's always, you know, I talk a lot about, I always use a scripture reference, but there's that guy who's sitting by the pool of, Bethsaida, and he's, you know, there's this local tradition or myth or whatever, where the waters would stir, this angel would come and stir these waters, and the first person who got in the water would get healed. I don't know. For all I know, it was true. I don't know. God does weird stuff. Maybe an angel did come and stir the waters. But the point is that he kind of put his faith in this plan, right? You know, he's going to get in there. He's going to get in that pool, and this is going to come about. And he wants, and he had kind of gotten so focused on that. So then Christ shows up. And here is like the author of being himself standing there going, and he says, what would you have me do? And the dude starts talking about how his plan hasn't been working. And it's real easy to go, man, what an idiot. Don't tell him how your plan's working. Tell him, tell him what you want. But don't we all do that? I know I do it. We start identifying the end with the means. We get so focused on how we want to bring something about that we stop trying to figure out what it is that we're going to bring about. And so it was good this morning. I just hunkered down in a coffee house in the corner, got the batch brew free refills, and just drank 4 or 5 cups of coffee and just wrote in my notebook. You know, this particular coffee house I like going to because there's these tables, and my favorite one's like off way in the back, but some of the tables they have marked for like social, like, or at least where there's like no laptops, no electronics at these, and they kind of try to put that into part of the shop and leave the rest of the shop without that, you know. And so I like going there because it forces me. Now, I'm good enough customer in their shop that if I want, I can pull my laptop out on one of those tables. No one's going to say a word, but it forces me to not just sit there and consume media or even work digitally. And so I purposely go to this shop because it's a shop where I go to get some work done, but then I sit at one of the tables that I can't use the electronics, and it forces me to get out the yellow legal pad and the blue pen. And there's something about that. It's like, okay, I start thinking conceptually. I start visioning. I start looking towards outcomes, you know? So that was, that's good. I enjoy doing that. I think that that's something we should do more of. I want to talk a little bit about that regarding the bigger picture of things here in a little while. So, all right, well, let's go to the break, and when we get back, I got a couple things up my sleeve. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. And we are talking about... What are we talking about? I don't know what we're talking about. It's too nice of a day. I'm stuck inside recording. And it's beautiful outside. And I'm in a good mood. And I'm in like a California mood where I'm like, the weather in this time of year. And, you know, I've been thinking about California, where it looks like we're going to hopefully be contract managing Shrine Coffee out in Santa Cruz, which means I'm probably going to be spending some extended time back in California again here in a year or so. And so I've kind of been getting back in that California mindset a little bit. And then the weather came along and helped out today. So, you know, I got up this morning after I shook my sinus headache off. My gosh. Just woke up just like locked up, but nothing like standing in steam for about 20 minutes in the shower to unlock me, a little bit of Sudafed, managed to shake it off without taking any painkillers or anything. But I looked at the weather and I'm like, it's going to be 70. What? You know what? I put shorts on and I put flip flops on, and I went outside and it was a little cold, but I threw a shirt on over. I put my corduroy shirt I like on, and I was just kind of rolling California style this morning. Got a burrito bowl for breakfast. Got some coffee. Just kind of rolling. And there's something about the shorts and the flip flops puts me in that California mood. You know, it's funny. This wasn't on the outline to talk about, but it's interesting how habit works, or how postures and how like triggers you can use for yourself. You know, like, if I go to that one shop I was talking about and I sit down the corner and I pull out certain things, it puts me in a certain mindset because I've done that work there so much. Right. And you know, it's like, just the combination of the yellow legal pad with the blue ink puts me in a certain mode, You know, it sounds funny, but it pulls me back about 10,000 feet or so and lets me kind of get some distance on what I'm thinking about and think a little more big picture, because I've just done that for so long. And it's funny, I didn't even think about this, but today I got up, put shorts on, put the flip-flops on. Flip-flops, by the time it's done, I'm eating for lunch what I used to eat for lunch when I lived in California, a big old giant salad. Right? It's like, I'm telling you, I'm starting to crave In-N-Out Burger. I want to go to the beach. There's just something about that, that you're putting these clothes on or using this particular thing, you know? I don't know. I think it's good to have things in your life where you can kind of have these well-worn, and I mean, obviously you can have bad habits. You can have bad, you know, things in your mind where it's like, you know, you get in this situation, you automatically react in this bad way or something like that. But the good news is that our habit making functions and our triggering kind of functions and these kind of synaptic connections like that, they cut both ways. And so you can learn to hack yourself, so to speak, you know, you can kind of act on yourself and be both subject and object of the action. So there you go. That was for free. Oh gosh, man, as laid back as I am today, I'm not, I don't know why I'm so laid back, because yesterday I came in and the dishwasher was dead at work. So we're still making the decision about what to do about it, whether we're going to pull the trigger and spend real money on a real commercial dishwasher, because we're wanting to kind of upgrade some things around the shop. I'm waiting on hearing about that, but so yesterday it's like you come in and it's like, oh great. So you're washing, I'm washing dishes by hand, and we had to go to like putting everything in to-go cups and stuff. But you know, and I woke up kind of worried about that, and it's like, I managed to shake it off. I'm telling you, 74 degrees, sunshine. I think I'm drunk on vitamin D is what's going on. I was outside and there was sunshine. It's been a while. All right. So Trump did an impromptu, an impromptu press conference this morning, evidently, and just basically yelled at the press the whole time from what I can understand. You know, it's funny though. It's like I said, I've been never Trump, you know, the whole time, but never Hillary just as much. And I've had mixed feelings about what Trump has done so far, but you do kind of get the feeling that Trump could step in and there's just too much to be had from the narrative. You know, there's just too much in this narrative that makes it too easy to keep doing this, you know, to keep reporting in this way, you know. And it's like, it's funny. It's like, I think it's a mess, and I think that the country's a mess right now, but I also kind of get the feeling that like he could come in and like rock it as hard as any president could right now after everything that's happened, and we would never get that reported. It's like, it would just be like, yeah, they would just find a way to spin every little thing to make it look bad. Now, I'm not saying that's what's happening. I think that there's kind of a mixture going on, but it's funny how, you know, something will happen and it's like, well, wait a minute. Didn't that happen with so-and-so? And didn't that happen with the one before him? Didn't that happen? Well, yeah, but it's different now. And in some ways it is, right? In some ways it is different. We are kind of down the rabbit hole. He's just kind of breaking all the political presuppositions in some ways. But I don't know. It's like, it turns right around and it's like, I don't think the guy understands the freedom of the press. I don't think he understands the role of the press, but I don't think the press understands the role of the press anymore. I don't think anyone understands the role of the press anymore. The press or the president or anybody. It's funny. It's like, it's become activists, and it's always kind of been, you know, kind of like we need to do investigation and we need to tell the truth and we need to do that. And it's always, let's be honest, in America for a long time, the press has had kind of a leftist slant to it. But it's interesting though. It's like, it seems like everyone is becoming activist. You know, judges are activists. The press are activists. And then, or ever, maybe it's more than just becoming activists. Maybe it's like, I think everyone is usurping their boundaries, because I think that Trump is following. Now, he's following the lead of both Bush and Obama, but I think that he's kind of usurping his authority. He's kind of like going here. He's going to not usurping. He's kind of pushing the boundaries of his authority in the executive branch as well. But it just seems like no one's content to play their part anymore. You know, everybody wants to be an activist or do more than their position is supposed to let them do. It's just, and I don't know. I'm getting fatigue on it. I'm just getting absolute fatigue on it. I'm like done. I'm like done even paying attention to it. But one more political insight here, or one conversation. Here I'm in Denver, Colorado, and we've kind of come spotlight Denver, Colorado right now because there's a woman who was about to be deported, and she has taken asylum in the basement of a church here in Denver, and is, you know, I guess, which is funny. I can't believe that our government, our military, our law enforcement won't enter a church. I'm not saying they should be able to. I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying I'm surprised that that kind of right and that kind of limitation, that kind of those boundaries have still been upheld to where they won't do that. But yeah, so this woman is. It has been convicted of two misdemeanors. Now here's a, and this is, I want to talk about this. This was probably going to take a little longer than this, the rest of this segment, but oh man, on one side you go, okay, look, we're not going to try to what Trump kept saying and what people that have kind of, argued for an immigration enforcement with a little more teeth to it. Have says like, look, we're going to, and even Obama said, we're going to prioritize people who have broke the law. So if you're here illegally and you are not playing by the rules and you're breaking our laws, you're committing crimes, then you're going to be the front of the line for deportation, you know? So then we got this kid out in Seattle that's being deported and everyone's freaking out over it. But, and I haven't looked up closely into it, but evidently the dude's a gang member and he's an admitted gang member. Like he talks about being a gang member. And so I'm going to go, okay, well that's more traditional in the sense of like, yes, the guy's committed some crimes and besides being undocumented and being here. Now here's where it gets interesting with this lady. She's been busted for a misdemeanor twice, but the misdemeanor that she's busted for is providing a fake social security number. So if we're going to say that we're only going to deport people who have committed a crime, but we're going to include entering the country illegally, or maybe they haven't quite gone that far. If they're going to say, look, there's two ways that you can work in America if you're undocumented, and both of them are a misdemeanor, I'm sure. One of them is to work under the table and to not pay your taxes and all that stuff. The other one is to work and pay taxes, but you don't have a social security number, so you're going to have to make one up. And this woman made up a social security number, evidently based on like her birth date and some stuff like that. Now, I get it. I heard someone making the argument the other day is like, look, if I used a fake social security number as an American and didn't pay my taxes or whatever, or like just if I used a fake social security number as an American citizen, I would be in trouble. I would get convicted. I would go to jail or something. I would be in trouble. I can't do that. As an American citizen, I can't go apply for a job or something and fake my social security number or do something. I can't do that. You know, so that like maybe like not all of my income shows up and I can not pay a lower tax rate or something like that. I can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that. So why would we look the other way? There's a good question. When we get back, I want to talk about that a little bit. And I want to tell you about some of my experiences living in California and people I knew there. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew.
Been high, we crave a hanging and it's dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting. but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids. I'm telling you, I when I went down to the, I remember I went down to the Key Largo one time, and I was hanging with these old guys at a tiki bar, and they called it key disease. I feel like I have key disease today. It's like, it's so nice, and I just don't want to do anything. I'm like, I'm having trouble even thinking. It's funny, during the break, I was thinking about the segment, about the first two segments, kind of where I want to go with this, and I'm kind of starting to see a pattern in my shows. It seems like, I mean, I've always noticed like chatty first segment kind of bleeds over. It seems like it's like chatty first segment, politics, bigger issues and principles around politics, and theology, philosophy, kind of like, let's go deep on the last segment, which is funny. I think anybody who's listening is like, well, yeah, that's what you do every time. I'm just now kind of noticing that pattern myself. It's just, the pattern has kind of emerged from how I think. So we were talking about this woman in Denver, Colorado, who is holed up in the First Unitarian Universalist Church or whatever. She's held up in the basement of a church, and it has asked for sanctuary and is resisting being deported. Now, this woman has been convicted of two misdemeanors, and they were related to the giving of a false Social Security number. Now, here's the thing, is that if you're going to work in America, you, like I said in the last segment, you either have to work under the table, which is a misdemeanor, or you have to give a fake Social Security number, and you're gonna, and that's a misdemeanor. There's no one in America who is undocumented that has not committed one of those two misdemeanors, as best I could tell. There's just, by nature, you either have to give them a Social Security number and get in the system and pay tax, but that you don't have one because you're not a citizen. You're not documented, right? You're undocumented. That's the point. One of those documents you don't have is a Social Security card, right? So then you just make up a Social Security card, or you get a Social Security number, you know, you buy one off of one of these underground people or whatever, and then you work under that Social Security number, right? And that jacks someone's taxes up and all that stuff, right? And so I'm just looking at the Trump administration, and I'm going, okay, great. Are you just going to say that are you now saying we're only going to deport people who have committed crimes, but you're going to include the inevitable crimes of anyone who is here in an undocumented way? And I used to be more hardline on this back in the day, and then I got to know people who were undocumented immigrants. I have a friend who's an illegal alien, or I have several of them, was when I lived in California. But I worked with a guy, and he's really intelligent. We started talking about this, and he was like, look, man, I don't, the differences from like the old immigrants, like your grandparents, I don't want to be here. It's like, he tells me where he's from in Mexico. He's like, it's beautiful there. I love it. My family's there. I have a wife and kids there. I haven't seen my wife or my children, except like when pictures, in 5 years, but here are the options. Look, my country, this is him saying, talking about Mexico, is ran by a couple of cartels, about 5 to 7 families, which run everything, and a very corrupt government. And there are no jobs where I'm at. So there's nothing to do. So I got, my options are A, watch my family starve. B, pick up a gun and try to cause a revolution, get me and my family and everyone I love killed. Or I can hop the border and come up here, work in this restaurant and send money back there and not get to see my family. So it's like they're put in this desperate situation. Now let's also then go to the other side of this. And I've talked about this several times in the show recently. I think it's just a blazing example. Look at the dairy industry. There are no agricultural visas for the dairy industry, and there's no room on the, you can't raise the price of milk. You can't keep and milk cows for any less, and you have to make a profit. So in the middle, there's X amount of money you can spend on labor, and no, it's really hard, nasty work for not much, and Americans won't do it. So of course, you're going to get 90% of the people there are undocumented immigrants. That's just a recipe. But in my take, just politically, we did that. We put them in that situation. There's a supply and demand. There's this big demand for labor. There's this big need for that work right next door. And we won't open up a way for it to happen legally. So I'm just coming down. I'm for, if someone's here and they're not playing along, if they're not being a member of our society in some way, you know, they're killing people or selling drugs or doing or gang members or something like that. Yes, deport them. But some woman who's a mother of four and a grandmother of three, who the only thing she's done wrong is the same thing that everyone has done wrong if you're here without documentation. It's like, it's not like she's a gang member or something. It's like, that's ridiculous. We don't want to go down that route. Because if we go down that route, then it's like, okay, now we just have a ton of people. We're just gonna send everyone home. And then it's like, okay, well, what are we gonna do now? Okay, we're just gonna raise the price of milk, I guess. Okay, great. So now we just raise the price of milk, but we're gonna have to do that. We're gonna have to do something. We're gonna have to change some variable in the equation. Right now, there's X amount of variables in the equation. And if you're not gonna, I just keep using that example though. It's like, if you're not gonna raise the price of milk, if you're not gonna innovate some way to keep cows and feed them and milk them cheaper, if you're not going to somehow make it possible to be a corporation and not make profit, then you're going to have to allow people to work that are willing to do that job, right? For that amount of money. Now, I mean, whether that's the answer, I don't know. I mean, maybe they should just raise the price of milk. Maybe they should let that be a free market. Maybe they should take the control off of that. I don't know. But you can't do all these things and then, you know, punish someone for fulfilling that role. And it's like, you know, to go a little deeper, it's like the, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas says that if your neighbor breaks into your house to steal bread to feed his family, then not only is he not liable, not only is that not a sin because you had more than you needed and you didn't give to him and he was desperate and had to fulfill his role as the provider for his family, that you're actually kind of on the hook for his sin of stealing because you forced him into that situation. You forced him into that. And so I'm for it. Look, I'm all for making the immigration at that border orderly. And if that means building a wall, fine. I'm not one of those people that thinks it's just inherently evil to lock down our border and then know who's coming in. I don't think there's a problem with that. I'd like to see drugs not coming through that border. I see human trafficking not happening. I don't think it's merciful to keep some hole open so that some person can be smuggled through the middle of the night by some coyote and then held hostage if they don't give another $3,000 up or something like that. That's not or die of thirst out in the desert. That's not merciful. But at the same time, we have to fix our broken immigration system. My goodness, we got to fix this. We have to somehow do that. And I think that, and if you're listening to me and you're like, I thought you were conservative. I mean, look at Reagan. Reagan did an amnesty. Reagan was like, okay, look, if you're here now, it's cool. You know, so this is not wanting to enforce these laws or quite as vigorously as looks like it's starting to happen is not like some anti-conservative liberal perspective or something. I'm playing the Reagan card here in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I'm just, I don't, I just look at this and it's hitting close to home because it's happening in Denver. And I am just not interested in being part of that. I'm not interested that some being part of some movement or having the same adjective like conservative or Republican or something on my, that's applied to me and the same people doing something like that. I just don't, I'm just not interested. I just don't think that that's something that I want to be a part of. And it's like, you know, this morning when I was sitting working on the vision for Calyx and just trying to think outside of like how this comes by, I'm like, look, you know, with healthcare, with immigration, with all of this stuff, I think that it's time to, it's time for us to start building a vision for what it should look like. And then worry about how we get there afterwards. But like, if we could get everybody on the same page, if the partisan lines would disappear, what could we do? What would like healthcare look like in America? What would be the best way to go about doing it? What would it look like for each individual? What would it look like for families? What would it look like? How, and then we can talk about how we get there. And I don't mean, we have to have a conversation before we start talking about single payer, before we start talking about a completely market solution, before we start talking about, we have to say, what would it look like? We have to get the vision again. I think we have to get a vision for labor in America. I think we have to get a vision for industry in America. Because on the other side, everybody's like, well, we got to get manufacturing back. Really? Do we really want to do that? Is that really the kind of what we're committed to, is like bringing back factory jobs? Is that really the way to go? I'm not saying it's not, but it seems like we're just looking at, this is what we had and this is what we lost, and now we have to get it back again. Is that the only way to bring back the middle class? I don't know. I just think we just need a vision. And I don't know how to do that. Maybe we should start a website. Everything's fixed by a website, right? I don't know how to do it, but I don't know how to get it about. But we need to start thinking about the end and not the means a little bit, and get a feel for where we're heading. So where we're heading is into the break. So you're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, I'm done talking about politics. I'm done talking about all that stuff. Fourth segment, as I said before, it's time to get a little more theoretical, maybe a little more spiritual. You know, I was watching, Father Barron, or Bishop Barron, Robert Barron, did a couple of interviews with, what's the guy's last name? Ruben. He has like an online talk show. It's kind of like, he's been kind of progressive. He just did a video for Prager though. He's kind of having a moment where he's, realizing that he doesn't fit in the progressive world anymore. But anyway, he had Bishop Barron on. That was really interesting because Bishop Barron is, a traditional Orthodox Roman Catholic. And, this guy Ruben is gay and he's married, and this interview evidently has a studio in his home. So he had brought Bishop Barron in, and he said that he had started reading about his positions on gay marriage and he stopped because he wanted to kind of have a raw conversation with him. And he's just asked Bishop Barron, he's like, look, I'm gay and I'm married and you're in my home. Tell me what you think about gay marriage. It was a pretty good. So if you like, I would encourage you to go find that. Go look for, I'm sure it's on the wordonfire.org website with our Bishop Barron. Really good. Two-part interview. Really, 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 really good stuff. Really good stuff about atheism and belief in theism. It's funny. I mean, I've been kind of influenced by his thought. both from watching his videos and from reading his book, The Priority of Christ. And which, if you haven't read it, go run now and buy a copy of The Priority of Christ by Robert Barron and read it. It is some of the most breathtakingly beautiful theology I've read in a long time. I need to reread it. But he was talking about, anyway, so there was something that, Robert Barron said the other day that just kind of got me thinking. He quoted C.S. Lewis, and to paraphrase it, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said, that you're never kind of more, it's at that moment that you have a really optimal experience, when you experience some great beauty or some real sublime beauty, or you see something just so good, or you come to some great realization of the true, you learn and understand some great truth. And I get this experience mostly regarding the beautiful. So, you know, you have some deep experience of sublime beauty, and embedded in that, like while it's happening and then right after, is kind of a disappointment. You know, and I know that I'll have some experience of great beauty, and then I'll be kind of disappointed. It falls short somehow. And I'm like, no, I just wasn't in it. I didn't give myself to it. I didn't really experience it. I was too distracted. I was thinking about the stuff I'm worried about. I was like, I'm too ADD. I couldn't, if I could really just be present in the present moment and really experience this moment, instantiated moment of beauty, then I wouldn't have this feeling of disappointment. And he talks about Lewis saying that it's at those moments that we feel that disappointment, because what we're longing for is not this beautiful thing or this beautiful experience, but the beautiful. There's something that keeps you, it's like you eat something that's amazing and yet you're always still kind of hungry and you don't feel quite satisfied. You know, it's interesting. I think that is the, that's just the nature of the reality we live in, this side of the veil. And I think it's designed to be such. I think reality is designed to intrigue you, enrapture you, and then disappoint you. It's meant to not let you rest in it and think that you've found what you're looking for. Reality is built in a way, or maybe you're built in a way to crave, you're built in a way to crave something more than any instantiation of beauty can give you, or any instantiation of the true. You know, and then it's funny because I was reading Jazani the other day, and I know I talked about this recently, but I think, and if I'm repeating a segment that I've already talked about, I apologize. I think this was on the show that I scrapped, and I wanted to pick this back up. This is worth talking about a second time. If you like my show, you'll like it. If I already picked this up, I'm sorry. I think this segment, these thoughts were on the show that I scrapped the other day. But I was reading Jazani in The Risk of Education. He was talking about this experience you have when you come to some deeper understanding of truth. Like you understand something, and it points to something beyond itself. And so then you dig further and you get up underneath that and you gain another truth. And then you see that kind of points to something. And you keep going and you keep going and you keep going and you keep digging deeper, 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 deeper into reality with your intellect. And you find so much amazing understanding, so much truth, but that truth always points to something else, right? And I think there are going to be two reactions to that. You can either say, you can become kind of a nihilist and go, oh, look, this is just an, you can dig and dig and dig and you're never going to get to water. You're just going to keep digging and nothing ever ends. And so it's fruitless. Or you can make the leap of saying, oh, everything that I find points beyond itself. And then the argument that Jazani makes is that, and this is the argument that St. Thomas makes, this is why theology is the queen of the sciences, is that revelation, faith, faith is a way of knowing. Faith gives us access to some of those things that our intellect and our hearts crave, but we can't get to. We try to get to them, but we can't get to them. We can only get so far. And we just keep digging and we keep digging. It's like those Russian nesting dolls. You open the big doll and then there's another one inside. And you're like, I think there's something in here. So you keep going and there's another one inside. And if you just keep going and you keep going, if you just keep getting the smaller and smaller, deeper, deeper, deeper dolls, you start going, look, this is just fruitless. I keep opening these things and there's another one inside. It's like, you can either just become a nihilist or you can go, oh, this all points to something beyond. And faith allows us to move beyond that. Now, so there's two things I want to talk about with this before the end of the break. The first of them is that experience that I've had, St. Anselm says, fides quaerens intellectum, faith seeking understanding, right? I've had the experience several times and it has affected the way I think about the world in a deep way, some of these arguments, but there's things you couldn't quite get to. There's no way to kind of start. You can't get there from here. Jazani quotes Kafka in that book where he says there is a point of arrival, but there's no way to get there. Right. So there is a place that you could get, but there's no way to get there. It's like, there was a saying when I was growing up, you can't get there from here, and it's so there is kind of that. You can't do that climb picture there. And I know that these things exist. There are climbing routes on certain rocks that you can climb down them, but you can't climb up them, or vice versa. You could climb up them and not get back down. I think reality is built that way. I think there are heights that we can't ascend raw from the bottom. But if we can somehow be lifted up by the rope and put on top through faith, you can kind of crawl back down, so to speak. And by doing that, you could see maybe not a way that you could have got here, but now that you've come back down, you can get back up, so to speak. You couldn't have done it without, there was just parts of that you couldn't have seen. There was a handhold on the other side of that rock that when you're coming back up, it's there, but you can't see it. And the only way you would have ever known it was there is if you had seen it on the way down. Right? So you go ahead and make that leap and jump and throw your hand over that rock and it lands on something that it can hold on to. But you wouldn't have been able to know that was there. It was there, but you couldn't get there. So that's one thing, is there's sometimes, or it's like an algebra problem when you work and work and work and work and work and you can't fix it. And then sometimes the teacher will go, okay, look, I'm just going to tell you the answer. It's X equals 8. Now, how did I get there? And you start with X equals 8 and you work backwards and you see how it works. And now you can work it forwards and get to X equals 8, right? I think that faith plays that role. Oh goodness, we're out of time. I was going to talk about that experience of the beautiful and how that relates to, some things in our world, that we strive for and get us into trouble. But I think we've ran out of time. So, oh goodness. Beautiful day. Denver, Colorado. Good being with you guys. Thanks for listening. Shoot me an email, thecounterposition@gmail.com. And let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I'll take your place, marble stone.